Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, we're going to be talking about Intangible Asset number 82. That's a film opening at the CCA, and about Women's Health Week. I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Akushla Bastable and Molly Sturgis. They are presenting, along with the Santa Fe Opera and Little Globe, Life Songs. It's a concert that's happening this Sunday, Mother's Day, at 4 o'clock at the Lenzic. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So this is the fourth year that you've done Life Songs. What's it all about? What is it?
Yeah, Life Songs, you know, is this kind of amazing program that you just sort of can't believe that it's happening. About 4 years ago, after doing a big project with the Santa Fe Opera, Memory Lines, which was a big community opera, we were doing sessions in a nursing home, Santa Fe Care Center, and I became aware of the fact that there are a lot of people who can't participate in external activities from nursing care centers. And we became interested in what it would be to do a collaborative project with people in nursing home, and it has expanded to people in hospice care as well, that would bring artists, musicians, writers into collaboration with people in this kind of care, and to collaboratively write pieces that would then be sung and performed by youth choirs, community musicians, and that would essentially be expressions, not necessarily narratives of somebody's life, could be, but a kind of musical, artistic expression that occurs over many months. And over the years, we've moved from performing in the nursing home to a church to now the Lenzic, last year the National Hispanic Cultural Center, and this year we're back at the Lenzic again. So it's truly a celebration of life in its many forms.
How do you approach the people and get them involved in the process?
Well, we have a number of community partners, extraordinary community partners, and so we're working with Amber Care Hospice in Santa Fe, as well as the Santa Fe Care Center, which is a long-term care facility, or nursing home, and Coming Home Connection. And Coming Home Connection works with people both in hospice care but also with long-term illness, and so that's the other component. We're working with people on hospice care, then also in nursing homes, and then also those with long-term illnesses. And we, because of these partnerships, they introduce us to people that they think might be possibly interested in collaborating on such a thing. And so we go and meet them, and we talk about the project, and it's what's so, I think, so elegant about this process is its simplicity. It really is about an exchange between between artists and then the participating artist who would be in hospice care or in the nursing home. So, and we, over many months, we create a song together, and that's through sort of lots of different processes. And each artist comes to the table with different ways of approaching that. And then, of course, the participating artist also has, preferences or certain strengths. I mean, I know this year we have a number of people who are artists in their own right. So we have Peter Kirk, with whom Molly is working, who is a musician and an arranger. And then we also have an artist called Radisha, who is a beautiful visual artist. And then we have other people who've never considered themselves artists at all, but through the process and over several months, and because the process is quite intimate and very delicate, very, very gentle, something emerges. And as Molly said, sometimes these are narrative history type songs, and sometimes they're just expressions and of a moment or desires. And there was one song a number of years ago that was written in collaboration with Molly by a woman who had never been to the sea, and her song was all about the sea. It was really beautiful. It was an ode to the sea. It was an extraordinary thing. So.
When you start working with somebody, how do you begin a collaboration, particularly somebody's not, I mean, you're calling everybody an artist. Some of these people are just regular people who've never composed a song or anything like that, or probably maybe even a poem.
Yeah, I love this question. I was just presenting this project at UNM to a group of students, and one of them said, how do you get these songs out of people? Those were their words, and I thought, oh, that couldn't be more different than how we feel about it and what's at the heart of the creative practice that I think is life songs, and certainly something we hold dear at Little Globe, which is when we sit down to really be with somebody and kind of put aside an agenda and really show up. Mm-hmm. I think really just in a very present kind of way, bring ourselves to that moment. It gives permission, I think, for, well, both of us really, to come into that moment. And out of there, I think if we're listening, there are little things that emerge. It might be something from a conversation. We may start talking, you know, very casually. Sometimes people do want to talk about their lives in a really, sometimes they have really strong ideas. They hear about the project and they think, I really want to talk about when I left Tucumcari to nursing school. You know, I'm thinking of Janine and what that was like for her to leave this small New Mexican town and suddenly find herself in Denver in nursing school and meeting this man that would become her husband and then would go away to war. And so, you know, with Janine, it was kind of an evolution of a conversation. Some people will say, you know, I'm not an artist at all. I don't have a creative bone in my body. But you could be sitting in a room and you look at a painting or a picture overhead and say, that's a really, you know, well, it might be a very mediocre painting if you're in a nursing home, but you might say, wow, what does that cactus remind you of? Or what do those mountains remind you of? And somebody might say, oh, you know, it reminds me of walking up a hill, you know, the wind could be blowing. It doesn't even have to be a memory. Some people don't have access to their memories. What do you imagine it feels like on top of that mountain? Oh, well, it might feel cold. So that's talking. But for other people, it might be looking at photographs. It might be visual. It might actually be musical as well. Mm-hmm. We might bring in a MIDI keyboard, or another composer might bring in a different instrument and play something. What does that sound like to you? What does that feel like to you? And you might start there. So one of the things we do as facilitating artists on Life Songs, we really try to be flexible and to meet people where they are and or where we feel them to be, and then bring ourselves to that place. So it's like I take a step, you take a step, I take a step, you take a step. And pretty soon, if you leave enough time and you start composing things where you then bring it back and say, what do you think of that? And even if somebody doesn't have the language to say, wow, I really don't like that chorus, or I don't like that ostinato, or they may not have that language, but most people can say something. Mm-hmm. And then over time, you end up with an ownership process where it really has become something that they feel. And their families often feel it, too. Mm-hmm. It's some we've learned over time, especially with hospice care, this work often involves not just the person, but the whole extended family.
Particularly for people, I think, in hospice care, because they're very near the end of life. And so this has a resonance beyond, you know, the immediate. And actually that's something I feel is very significant about the process, is that what's so beautiful for us, I think, is to come to the table as an artist, yes, certainly, but you're challenged as an artist. It's because you are walking into a very collaborative process. And I think, you know, often artists come in with an intention and an idea and agenda. And so to walk it, to begin a process like this means that everyone's a little bit vulnerable. We're all vulnerable walking in, because we're all coming with an open, you know, open heart and just the desire to connect and create an exchange. And the what is so, I think, what's so resonant about the pieces is that they really are about living and what it means to be a human being. And that's why I think it's a very significant project for the artists involved as well, because they really get to work with people and to create something that is about that human being's experience of living. And that, I think, is an extraordinary gift to be given as an artist. I really do. I believe that profoundly. Molly and I often talk about this, but it's one of the most extraordinary things, projects. It's not even a project. One of the most extraordinary gifts in my life to be able to work with people in this way. I feel I grow as an artist.
When somebody is at the end of life, they're facing mortality, they're facing pain, they're facing the weakening of their powers, of whether they be physical, mental, everything. What advantage does that give to them and to this process?
You know, one of our collaborating artists, Henry Strickman, who's a writer, said last year in a documentary about Life Songs, which you can see on Vimeo. If you go to Vimeo Little Globe, you can watch documentaries about this project. He said, you know, this is a time when lots of things get stripped away and you get to the essentials. And I really liked how he said that. And I think that's one of the things about why it's such an honor to work in a place when people are in transition in general. It could be medical transition. That there's something kind of clarifying and quite honest. It's not, sometimes there's pain involved, emotional pain or physical pain. Sometimes there's loss. Sometimes there's joy. Mm-hmm. There's all of it, really. But there is something, I think, kind of more available than some other stages of life. And that's one of the reasons it's such an honor. I think it's a little different working with people who are looking at a long-term situation in a nursing care center, because sometimes there, you might be there for a long time, and you've lost a lot of agency, typically. Mm-hmm. And that's true, obviously, in hospice as well. You're losing a sense of control, you know, but there's a kind of a process around that. I just find, you know, this year Life Songs has two components. Mm-hmm. We write individually or in small teams with people in hospice care or in their homes or in with Coming Home Connection in their homes in terms of long care, and we create pieces. But we also have something called the Life Songs Performance Ensemble, which was created because we knew that we needed something where more people could be involved. We had a lot of people wanting to be involved in this project. Plus, we noticed that gearing up for a performance is a beautiful thing, but it's a big thing. And in the aftermath, you can kind of risk a sort of disappointment or a loss of energy that can have effects for people who are feeling vulnerable in their lives. So we wanted to create an ongoing ensemble. So we've been doing that and making adaptive instruments. And I bring that up because
instruments?
Mm-hmm. Instruments that allow people to compose who may not have the physical capacity or know how to play an instrument. So we've worked with two different composers who...
Zevon
Paulsen and Paniotis to create, using computer coding, to create musical instruments that allow people to participate in real-time composition.
And so this year, for example, there are a number of them are working on different types of keyboards. And they will be able to, you know, we have people who have really very limited physical capacity, but they have an extraordinary creative capacity. And so it's just really, in a way, it's like freeing that, isn't it? And it's so beautiful to see. And the ensemble, I just want to mention about the ensemble. The ensemble is, it couldn't have turned out better, I like to think. Molly and I talked about creating this last year, and because we wanted to create more of a longer term sort of relationship with these wonderful people we were collaborating with from the Santa Fe Care Center. But we sent out an invitation for community members to get involved, and the response has been just beautiful. So we have a number of artists from the community, in addition to people who are just not necessarily artists by profession, but have kind of come to this collective, and it's a really beautiful experience. We meet most weeks, and over at the Santa Fe Complex, which has been a great partner to us, and just to see the exchange that happens between people, both from the care center and then from the wider community, is really quite extraordinary. And people have come forward with with themselves as artists as well, in a very startling way. We have some beautiful lanterns this year that'll process through the audience at the Lanzig, and they were made by Bobby Besselt, who's a wonderful artist living here.
And we have a third grade class performing this year.
With the lanterns.
With the lanterns.
Yeah. We're talking about Life Songs, which is a concert happening this Sunday, the 8th of May at 4 in the afternoon at the Lenzik. It's presented by the Santa Fe Opera and Little Globe. So who is actually performing? Are the people who are in the care center and hospice, are they on stage or not?
They are actually. As Molly mentioned this, so there's these two components. So for the ensemble, we have both the people from Santa Fe Care Center, and then, and by the way, that includes both people who are living there as residents and then also their activities director and their activities assistant and the son of one of the women who's at the Santa Fe Care Center, so it's very special. And they're in performance alongside the community members, so they will perform their own piece. And they are led, the music ensemble section of that is led by Panayotis, who's been a really wonderful collaborator for Molly and I. And then, so they will perform that piece, and that's one piece. And then we have seven other pieces that have been, that are individuals who have worked in collaboration with our artist team. And they are performed by the Dolce Suono Chorus from University of New Mexico. And they're also, some of them are being performed by members of the Young Voices program of the Santa Fe Opera, which is a program for teenagers, Santa Fe Opera, teenagers with great talent. Santa Fe Opera, and they're that's a really beautiful component.
There is a danger for audience members who are not involved. I mean, it's one thing if you are the daughter or niece or son or whatever relative of the person who's in care and is going through this whole process, and this beautiful thing emerges, but it's not necessarily beautiful to anybody else out there if it's not done with a level of artistry and finesse.
Right.
And you have to basically bring amateur work, which is what it would otherwise be, to a new level.
Well, there's a few things I want to say about that. One is the collaborating artists include, you know, Valerie Martinez, who is our poet laureate, you know, Henry Shookman, who's very published author, Robbie Rothschild of Round Mountain, Jeff Brown, you know,
Andrea
Deb Fort, Andrea Fellows-Walters, who this program would have never happened without her. She's the director of community engagement at the Santa Fe Opera. She's a beautiful writer.
And a visionary.
Mm-hmm. And a huge part of how this Life Songs wouldn't be without Andrea. And so you have that kind of collaboration where we care a lot about rigor, actually. I think one of the misconceptions we have about arts and community projects is that you have to simplify the art making or the music making. And I think that we need to look beyond that idea. I think we are all capable of a lot of artistic complexity and rigor. And
well, especially if you're collaborating with somebody like you guys.
Well, I think we're all capable. That's what we do as artists. We try really hard to kind of bring the level very high.
And that's what we come into the room with sort of knowing how to shape. But the material isn't ours. So the beauty is there. And we're just sort of pointing it out and saying, well, we can take this and helping to select and arrange it. And as Molly says, you know, the collaborating artists are really strong. We have Frederick Fram as well, who's a composer down in Albuquerque. And I mean, really strong. And so the pieces are very much collaborative. So if we have one of our collaborators this year was, or participating artist was Tomasita Martinez. And she's actually since passed. But she worked with Valerie Martinez and with Jeff Brown. And the piece that they've created is very much about the exchange that they had. It's Tomasita. I mean, her family can really see it and feel it. but it's also Valerie and it's also Jeff. They're very present there. And so that's the beauty of it. And then we were very careful from the get-go to when we thought about who performs these. We wanted there, it was very important for us that there be artistic and production excellence.
Yeah.
So the excellence is from through the process through to the production, I think.
And it's a way of honoring a life too, right? And one thing we hear from these concerts a lot, I mean, people, you know, I don't ever like to set up an audience, but we try very hard to not have, you know, this be a traditional concert either in the way that you sit down and just kind of consume it. We have very few spaces where we come together and honor dying and aging as part of an important part of human development and a human process. We care about this space. We try to make it as intimate as possible. We love the Lenzik staff. We love the Lenzik. And we try to make it a very human experience. And what we've heard over the years is that it is a deeply universal experience. Mm-hmm. That's the feedback we get again and again, that we all know this story, even if we haven't experienced it directly.
Absolutely. There's a verse in one of the songs this year, and it's about the song. It was written by Lina Archuleta, who lived and grew up in Velarde, and it's about how she met her husband. And she, oh my gosh, I've got the goosebumps just thinking about it. And she told, you know, it's about he used to come over the mountain to come and work in her father's orchard and to pick the apples and stuff, and they fell in love. And she has this, in the chorus, says, you know, he says, I came over the mountain for you, I came over Black Mesa for you, and then there's a few more lines, and then it says, now will you come over the mountain for me? And that, for me, is about any relationship you could possibly have. It's about an exchange. It's about one person doing something for it. So I've never been to Black Mesa, but I connect to that on a really profound level. And I remember connecting to it, and the first time I heard it, I cried.
Yeah.
And because it was so, so beautiful and such a beautiful statement and elegant statement of what it means to be in relationship with somebody. So, and many, the songs are like that. You connect to them. Yeah, you just do, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
The concert is called Life Songs. It's this Sunday, the 8th of May, at 4 o'clock at the Lenzik Performing Arts Center here in Santa Fe, presented by the Santa Fe Opera and Little Globe, Akushla Bastable and Molly Sturgis joining us today. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Mary Charlotte. It's a pleasure.
And we're going to go out with a song, which has been created through this process, and we're going to hear, I guess, your voice. Are you going to be actually performing, Molly?
I actually am. Which song are you playing? Dancing by Moonlight? Yeah, Dancing by Moonlight would be a good one to play. This is a song that we created with, it'll be the finale this year. The recording you're here is, we do lots of scratch recordings, so this is me at home laying it down. So you'll get to actually hear it with about 70 voices at the concert.
Mm-hmm. Ah,
and probably about 10 instrumentalists.
Yes.
Yeah,
it'll be great. And the voices from the University of New Mexico Dulce Suono Choir, but then also 20 children from Waldorf School. And
good heavens.
Yeah, and one thing I just wanted to mention, Mary Charlotte, is because I think it's very important, is the intergenerational nature of this program. So you have these people who are nearing the end of life creating, in collaboration with the artists, these songs, and then those songs are performed by young people, and not just young people, but mixed age groups. And then and this year, for the first time, we were working with the children from the Waldorf School, and it's very special.
Well, let's hear it. And once again, thanks both for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Step by step, that's the way that we started. Step by step, under the stars. Not too fast, kinda slowly.
I'd like now to welcome to the program Emma France. She is a jazz vocalist and music composer, and she's a filmmaker. Her new film is a documentary called Intangible Asset Number 82. It opens this weekend at the CCA here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary.
So you document your friend, Australian jazz drummer Simon Barker, who became fascinated by Korean music and rhythms and the energy and spirituality behind them. It's quite an extraordinary movie. Is there a natural connection between jazz rhythms and Korean drumming?
Well, this particular shamanic drumming, it's not only very complex, the sort of basis of their rhythms and so on, but they improvise on top of it. So that's a natural connection between jazz, which is, of course, improvised music.
So he, Simon Barker, is setting out to try to find a particular improvised shaman, basically Korean shaman, whose, I guess, recording of whose work or whose drumming he'd heard. How was that connection made in the first place? Who was this man?
Simon was actually passing through Korea on the way to Russia, doing a tour with an Australian pianist, Mark Isaacs. And he thought he would just stop and try and get a drum lesson with somebody, find out a little bit about the music. And this teacher played him this recording of the shaman. And when he first heard it, he didn't actually realize it was a shaman or anything about it. He just went, wow, this is the most complex rhythmic vocabulary I've heard. And there's obviously all this improvising there. And he was kind of blown away by the music. And then he found out this guy was a shaman, which also meant that he played for 3 days straight, playing this sort of really intense music. Oh, and also that this shaman was in his 70s at the time of the recording. So he also became fascinated by how, you know, quite an elderly gentleman could produce such energy over such sustained periods with such complex music. And then when he tried to find books or some transcriptions of the music, he couldn't find anything. So he also realized it was, you know, one of those traditions that was passed down orally. And so he became really fascinated. That was the initial inspiration for him.
On the way to trying to find this shaman, he meets another person whom you show in the film who's just unbelievable. He's a Korean, I guess, vocalist, you'd say, who practiced
yes.
his art by living by a waterfall for years on end,
yes.
singing all day long by the waterfall. Explain this person and this practice to us.
Yeah, it's totally unbelievable, that sort of level of commitment to your art. It's a style of singing called pansori, which tells epic stories through song. So these epic stories can last, so in other words, the songs last up to 7 or 8 hours, and the singers sing right through with just a drummer without pause. So it's also about this incredible energy and so on. And these stories that are very tied into history and nature. And so traditionally, the singers have learned by going to live on the waterfall for a couple of years, first with their master, who will teach them the song orally, and then they would then stay on for another 5 years and strengthen their voice and basically sing into the water and against the water to become as powerful or more powerful than the water and really strengthen their voice. So it's just an incredible thing that's very hard for us as Westerners to imagine doing. And he literally lived on a rock by a waterfall in the winter and the summer. So when there was snow and flies and heat and, you know, in all the elements, really incredible story.
Just the two examples that you've spoken of right now, I mean, somebody singing for 7 or 8 hours without ceasing at the top of his voice, a 70-year-old man drumming for days on end. In your understanding, having been through this journey yourself as filmmaker, you being a musician, where does that energy come from? It clearly is not something that most people can understand, or at least in the Western mind, that we feel that we could generate or do ourselves.
And of course, it takes a lot of practice, but they also work off these various principles. So they think about recycling energy. They think of it as a circular sort of motion. So the more you're performing or singing, the stronger you're getting. So instead of just throwing it out there into an empty void, they think of, well, the singer actually explains it beautifully, like having a rock tied to a string that you spin and you're spinning faster and faster and faster. And that tension that's created between the rock and yourself is this really strong energy that just keeps perpetuating itself. And that's how they think of it. So they sort of channel, as they push out, they sort of channel it back into themselves as well. So it's kind of a difficult concept when you first think about it, but as you sort of see it in practice, you kind of get an idea of what they're talking about. And then, of course, they just really build up their strength, but they also focus on this idea of relaxation when they play. So they don't create strength and energy by being tense. They really practice being incredibly at one with their instrument and being very relaxed. So they're not throwing away any energy as well, which is another great idea.
And one which Simon Barker, our friend whom we meet in this film, finds very useful and really seems to incorporate into his own work as a jazz drummer.
Yes, and this was a really fundamental idea that totally changed the way he plays, the way he approaches the Western drum kit, and just the way he approaches everything in life now. So kind of a really philosophical inner journey for him to become also at one with his instrument and comfortable with how and why he plays music and all of these things. And he's really applied those ideas in a very beautiful way as well, without trying to become a Korean musician or play their music.
But he does. I mean, we see a little bit of a kind of a collaboration between him and Korean musicians. Did he adopt some of the Korean music or learn some of it himself?
Yes. So he learned about the patterns and the rhythms and the way of the interaction. For example, when he plays with a singer, he's sort of listened to a lot of that music and how there's a sort of call and response between the singing and the drums. And so he is quite knowledgeable about all of that. But then he doesn't try to imitate it or play their instruments. So he sort of utilizes those rhythms on the drum kit. And for example, with the shamanic music, he took, you know, various instruments and applied them to, you know, one part of the drum kit or one gong, or and he sort of set up his drum kit in an unusual way. And then he utilizes those rhythms also mixed with the sort of jazz background that he has to come up with a very unique voice. So that's kind of was one of the very interesting processes that I wanted to follow. And it's how those unique musicians such as Simon do find all those tools of expression that turn them into a very unique musician.
We're talking with Emma Franz about her film Intangible Asset number 82, which is opening this weekend, this Friday night, at the CCA here in Santa Fe. Tell us where the name of the film comes from.
Well, the shaman that Simon heads off in search of, Kim Sok-chul, is actually designated by the Korean government as their intangible cultural asset, and then he's number 82. So the number actually applies to his art form, which is this East Coast Pusan shamanic ritual music. So he's, in a way, he's the holder of that tradition, and it's sort of like an honour to continue that tradition and be the master practitioner of that cultural style and so on. Personally, I loved the idea. I mean, the film really is about those intangible things in life that are so valuable, such as music and culture. And, you know, one of my great passions and the theme of this film before it even started was how music is a bridge between cultures and how it can help us understand ourselves and our community and those, you know, from disparate cultures. So I thought the title of The Shaman was actually a wonderful metaphor for what I was trying to say through the film. And that's just valuing those intangible things in life. Because, you know, we very easily and often forget that.
It's a profound film. I was watching it, and as I was watching it, I thought, I should go see this again. I was watching the DVD in a quiet theater and think about it and feel it and take it in some more, because this is something that, in a way, I mean, you and Simon Barker had the privilege of actually going on a rather long journey together through Korea and meeting these various people. We kind of have to take it all in an hour and a half.
It's a lot to take in.
It's a lot to take in, and I was wondering, I mean, I don't even know if you can really put it into words, but there are these elements of rhythms which involve breathing, which involve gravity, emotion, trance, shamanism, and the relationships among all of those things are something that I guess if you don't learn that when you're young and then you come to it when you're older, it's a lot to try to integrate.
Yeah, it's I mean, thank you first for saying that you'd want to see it again. It was, for Simon, it was a 10-year journey, so it really took him a long time to understand deeply a lot of those concepts. But in the same way, he will be the first one to say they're actually quite simple concepts. It's sort of thinking about it and how to apply it to what you do. For me, the journey was both long and it felt short, but then obviously I spent years with the material and editing as well and coming to understand it better. And so I tried to convey those ideas through the film as sort of as simply as I could, so that people could just get a taste of it and maybe see it in action, because that's how it made sense to both Simon and I, was actually being there amongst it and just seeing it applied in everyday life, because it doesn't just apply to the practice of the music. It applies to how they kind of conduct themselves. And everything is related to nature. And so when you're there in nature witnessing a lot of these things, it sort of makes more sense. So hopefully through the film and the way I've tried to break down those ideas, it makes a little bit of sense. There were concepts I couldn't even include in the film because there's only so much you can put into one film. One, for example, is an idea called Han, which is the unresolved sorrow of those who have passed on. And it's one of the things that they try to reconcile through music as a bridge between the living and the dead and the people who still are living. And it's just a beautiful idea and I just literally couldn't even fit it into the film. But, you know, hopefully if people are interested in that sort of thing, the film might even inspire them to try and find out a little bit more about it.
When you say the unresolved sorrow of those who've passed on, in other words, somebody who's died with an unresolved sorrow and the people on the ground here trying to help them resolve it after they're passed?
Yes. So that's a lot of what the shamans do. They might do rituals for families and just try, you know, maybe a family's had somebody taken away from them unexpectedly in an accident or some other, you know, tragic situation, and part of the job of this ritual is to try and help the family and say things to their dead person and vice versa, and sort of reconcile some of that, you know. Obviously it runs a lot deeper than that and in many different applications. But another example is the shaman describes that his drum is made of a branch on which a young virgin hung herself. And, I mean, it's incredibly tragic. But the idea is that the drum can forever kind of be her voice and sing that unresolved sorrow. So it's kind of, at first seems horrific, but it's a very beautiful concept in a way.
Now, we see in the film how all of this affects Simon Barker and his music, his drumming. You are also a jazz musician. You're a jazz vocalist and composer. How has it affected you?
Well, it's affected me quite deeply. Unfortunately, since I made the film, I haven't had time to be a full-time musician. But interestingly enough, when I do have performances, and I really, in a way, feel that I should be very nervous because I'm kind of out of practice, even though I do a lot of practice leading up to performances. But I think about those ideas, and especially the one of relaxation, and also that just playing music is just one of the most fun things you'll get to do all day. So there's kind of no reason, if you take it out of the ego and think of it as a community thing and just how fun it's going to be, just the way that has changed my sense of stage, well, not stage fright, but nerves, and then how it's helped me relax into my own voice and really not think so much about technique, but just think about what I'm trying to put out there. And so it sounds very simplistic in a way, but when you see it, when you're inspired by witnessing people who do that, I feel like it's really changed the way I approach singing.
There are so many examples in non-Western cultures of Westerners going and trying to find something and getting something really profound from it, whether it be Afro-Cuban culture, whether it be African culture or Icelandic, anything. And here, and this is another of these stories, what did the Korean musicians get out of meeting Simon and out of engaging with him and with you?
That's a great question. Not many people ask that, actually. I mean, I can't, of course, speak for them, but I think they all feel that they have been exposed to something new as well. The singer now tours with Simon very regularly, and until then he'd improvised within the style of his music, but he hadn't gone into more abstract improvisation, which he now does. So he's found that very freeing, and he also feels it's taken his music to the world, which it has. And the shaman's family, for example, I happened to meet one of his daughters in Copenhagen when I was there for a conference, and she happened to be performing there, but she actually was crying and saying, you know, we all feel that you took our father's music to the world. And so they all feel like there was something that they gained from the experience in various different ways. So that, you know, I think they've definitely, their interaction with Simon has been a lot more profound. And then I'm glad that in some ways the film has also had an effect on what they do. And the shaman's grandfather had never met a Westerner before. So things like that are very interesting because, of course, it's also opening up our eyes to them, and it's also opening their eyes to us and maybe breaking some preconceptions about who Westerners are.
Right. I imagine you would get a lot of interest about this film from other artists and musicians. How have they, out in the rest of the world, as you've shown this in festivals, how have they received the film?
Oh, the response has been really beautiful. It's been really great. I was very nervous. You know, you're obviously very nervous when you throw your baby out into the world, but it's been wonderful. And one of the great pleasures for me has been seeing that the interest is not just restricted to musicians and artists, that people get something from the film, even if they're not into music. And this music's quite abstract as well. I've had people who are ill saying they've found the Simon's personal journey so inspirational that it's helped them, or the singer's journey and commitment. I've had, you know, people who could never get their head around the idea of jazz, so they feel that they understand jazz more through Simon's journey, and different. And of course, people who knew very little about Korea, as I did when I started, just right, being opened up to the world of the Korean, you know, and it's broken a lot of preconceptions there as well. So I've been really, really thrilled with the responses so far to the film.
Emma Franz's documentary, Intangible Asset Number 82, opens this weekend at the CCA in Santa Fe, ccasantafe.org, 505-982-1338. Emma, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much.
I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Katie Yanda. She is with Women's Health Services and is here to talk about the Mother's Day community walk along the Santa Fe River and the upcoming Women's Health Week. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte. It's great to be here.
So, women, let's first of all talk about this community walk. What's going on? That's for women and girls and presumably the boys and men and their families?
Everyone else. Yes, it's for everyone. A whole afternoon of family fun. And it's a Mother's Day community walk, as you said, that is a couple Sundays, or Sunday, May 8th. And it is celebrating the health of women and girls, but it is going to be a lot of activities and music and dance, all at the Casa Solana Center, which is 901 West Alameda. So as you said, it's celebrating the health of women and girls, but anyone is welcome.
And so that is the kickoff for a whole week of events, which you can find out more about at spreadthehealthsantafe.org. What is happening this week, and what's the sort of gist of it? Why do we have to celebrate women's health and try to spread that around women's health in particular?
Yeah, it's the week, the Mother's Day walk, and the week in general is all about how important our health is. So, of course, it's not just important for women and girls. It's important for everybody. But it is so easy when in this crazy busy lives of ours to not prioritize your health. And so this Mother's Day walk and the whole week is to celebrate it, to say, like, this is super fun. There are great activities. Welcome to spring. Celebrate Mother's Day. Celebrate your mamas, your niñas, your sisters. And come out and do stuff that's fun and healthy. So, as you said, the walk, there's a walk, it's a really, really pretty, you know, that stretch of the river by the park there.
Right, on West Alameda.
Yep, on West Alameda. So it's really pretty. And there's going to be, like, stations that, you know, along sort of a physical treasure hunt about, you know, doing some Zumba, doing some salsa, doing some, like, aerobics, etc. Then there'll be Kamusha Women's Marimba Ensemble.
Nice.
Great, great music. Mosaic Dance Company, they're out of the Pomegranate Dance Studio, doing some belly dancing. There will be free massage and acupuncture, you know, just really good stuff, a jumpy castle for kids, face painting, so, like, health is fun, you know, it can involve, you know, everyone. And then we go into the week, which has classes at Women's Health Services, both about sort of mental health and really practical plans for de-stressing your life, and PAPS and mammograms, new guidelines for women, so stuff like that. We are partners with Genoveva, the Genoveva Community, Genoveva Chavez Community Center, so there's going to be free classes all week.
But you've got to get your passes at Women's Health, and
you've
then
got to
go down there and use the free classes.
Exactly. So you get passes that Mother's Day at the walk, so they've got Zumba and cardio and, you know, all these fun things. We're also partners with Studio Nia, and so they'll have a free day of classes on Tuesday.
Tuesday, the 10th of May.
The 10th of May. Partners with Santa Fe Sports Medicine. They're doing how to prevent knee injuries for female athletes. And then also, very interesting for myself, as an almost new mom, how to get back in shape after birth. So different stuff throughout the week that's just really interesting. Almost everything, actually everything I mentioned is free.
Excellent.
Yeah, and so, again, there's just so many different ways to be healthy in Santa Fe. And we kind of think of this week as like a health map of Santa Fe, connecting the dots of all the different resources, all the different sites. Get out there and walk, get out there and move, go out and dance if that's your thing. Yeah.
And if you want to find out more information about all of those wonderful free events, you can call 955-9417, or you can just go to spreadthehealthsantafe.org. And Katie, we will see you at the Mother's Day Community Walk along the Santa Fe River. And it's, 2 to 4 in the afternoon? That's a civilized hour.
We thought so.
Some of these things start at 8:30 a.m.,
exactly.
Which is just wrong.
Come out after brunch, right? If you're celebrating, again, your mama or yourself or your friends, it's that lovely hour in the afternoon. So it's Sunday, May 8th, 2 to 4. And as you said, it's celebrating the health of women and girls, but it's for everybody. And we all know that we got lots of women and girls in our lives that we love. So bring the kids. Again, lots of fun stuff for kids.
And Katie's sitting here 9 months pregnant, so happy Mother's Day to you.
Thank you so much. It's a it's a very special one for me. I'll be there probably with babe in arms.
Exactly. Okay, well, good. Thanks so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.